very good afternoon to you all. Welcome to What's Cooking for October. If you were listening last month, you'll remember that we took a look at food and rationing during the First World War. Well, we're going to continue that theme today, moving on to the Second World War. And as we'll see, Britain would do better with rationing and food during the Second World War, 1939 to 1945. The British government began planning for wartime rationing in 1936. Should war occur again, this time they hoped to be better prepared, based on their experiences the last time around. A Food Defence Plans Department was set up as part of the Board of Trade to do the project planning. Ration booklets were printed up in 1938, ready to go. Britain declared war on Germany on the 3rd of September 1939. On the 4th of September 1939, the Ministry of Food was reconstituted. Its methods of communicating would prove to be effective. By the end of the war, housewives had become very educated in nutritional vocabulary. The ministry issued many cooking leaflets, often dedicated to specific topics, such as the magic of carrots. The language used was practical and realistic for the time. Enlisting ingredients for suggested recipes, the government leaflets would often say, beside an ingredient such as butter, if possible. Cooking demonstrations by women such as Marguerite Patton were held in many stores, including Harrods. Educational short movies on cooking were made for showing at cinemas. BBC Radio ran a morning radio programme called Kitchen Front, hosted by Stuart Petrie Brodie, and featuring guests such as Marguerite Patton. The already printed ration booklets were issued to the public on 8 September 1939, 5 days after war was declared. They were not actually used until 4 months later, however. Bringing rationing into effect was postponed several times owing to a campaign in the press led by the Daily Express newspaper, which called rationing an unnecessary folly and government interference with civil liberties. The government finally overcame political resistance, and rationing came into effect on 8 January 1940. It's important to note that the food coupons in ration booklets didn't entitle you to, say, butter for free. Instead, they entitle you to purchase a certain amount of butter. You still had to come up with the money. A ration book was issued to each person and each child. The public went to their local designated Ministry of Food officers to collect their ration books. A responsible person in the household could pick up and sign for the ration booklets for everyone in the household. New ration books were issued about once a year to replace a lost booklet. You had to sign a declaration and pay a 1 shilling fine. You had to register at a store that you wished to use the coupons at, and could only use them there. There was no shopping around for those items. At first, you had to use the coupons during the week indicated for those particular coupons being valid. Later, you could save them up a bit. Bacon or ham for 2 weeks, other items for 4 weeks. There actually was some flexibility in the system for special dietary needs. Special ration books were issued for vegetarians, for those with religious dietary restrictions, Muslim and Jewish people with special health needs, those engaged in hard physical labour, people from poorer backgrounds, etc. Rationing meant that no matter how rich you were, the food available was equally shared at fair prices. Rations applied to the royal family as well. Even they were issued ration books and had to register at merchants to use them. An important functional principle was that, unlike during the First World War, the government applied rationing only to items that it could be sure of people being able to get always. The goal was to ensure that the consumer's ration entitlement would always be honoured. A ration coupon was your guarantee that you would get your share of something, however small the shares were. Rationing wasn't applied to seasonal items, say summer fruit such as berries, as the government couldn't guarantee clearly their year-round supply. Notable items that were never rationed included salt and coffee. Britons weren't big coffee drinkers at the time anyway. Other items such as lemons and bananas weren't rationed either, because they simply disappeared from Britain for the entire war. Bread was unrationed during the war and then oddly rationed after it. Fresh oranges got through occasionally from America, but consumption of them was restricted to children only. Points rationing was introduced on 1 December 1941 via a separate pink ration book. It ran in conjunction with regular coupon rationing, but was more flexible than coupon rationing. A butter coupon would entitle you to purchase X amount of butter that week, but if you didn't use it on butter, that was that. You couldn't use it on anything else, and you couldn't carry it forward. They were valid only for that four-week period. The points rations gave shoppers greater choice than the ration coupon did, putting them in control of their shopping. You got a certain number of points to use on any of the items in any combination you wished that were covered under points rationing. Again, you still had to cough up the cash for the actual purchase. And you could do the purchases anywhere, not just at the grocer you registered at for the coupon usage. The Ministry of Food launched its Dig for Victory campaign in October 1939, 1 month after war broke out. The campaign encouraged people to transform their front and back gardens into vegetable plots. The goal was to replace imported food, thus freeing up shipping space for more valuable war materials and to make up for food that was sunk in transit. By the end of 1940, 728,000 tons of food making its way to Britain had been lost or sunk by German submarine activity. In 1940, millions of commercially farmed hens had to be killed and sold off as food, as there was a shortage of stuff to feed them. This led to an egg shortage and egg rationing of one egg per person a week. Expectant mothers and vegetarians were allowed two eggs a week. Consequently, people who hadn't before and could started keeping chickens in their back gardens, because that meant you had unrationed eggs. The catch was, you had to give up your egg ration, but you got entitlement for grain rations instead for your chickens. Pig clubs added thousands of pounds of pork to tables. Even soldiers at permanent stations had pig clubs. Communities set up neighbourhood pig clubs to buy a pig, then feed it scraps from the households involved. In many towns, the councils put food waste bins in the streets. If you weren't part of a pig club, in there went peelings and scraps to be sent to farms to feed pigs. If you belonged to a pig club that was registered, you had to give up your meat coupons. If you kept a private pig, you had to register the pig because half was supposed to go to the government, but not everyone registered their pigs. Rabbit keeping also became popular. They provided a ready source of meat, as they breed year-round, and you could even sell the rabbit skin to be used for boots, coats, etc. "This is a food war," said Lord Walton, Minister of Food, in 1941. "Every extra row of vegetables in allotments saves shipping. The battle on the kitchen front cannot be won without help from the kitchen garden." Commercial fertilisers for gardens had, of course, disappeared at the start of the war. So whenever a delivery cart and horse or a police horse happened to pass by a house, mothers would send many a humiliated child out to the road with a bucket and shovel in the hopes that the passing horse had left a calling card in the form of some manure. During the war, daylight saving was put ahead by 2 hours every year in March to allow more daylight hours for farming and gardening after work. Overall, the campaign was a massive success. By 1943, it was estimated that home gardens were producing over 1 million tonnes of produce, and by 1945, around 75% of food consumed in Britain was produced in Britain. These were the days before refrigeration, and freezing was common in household kitchens. And not just in Britain. The refrigerator revolution did not sweep America until the late 1940s. So housewives still knew and used preservation techniques such as canning. The Ministry of Food educated people with leaflets, radio programmes and community demonstrations on the latest and greatest food preserving techniques to ensure that no food went to waste. Eggs could be kept fresher for a bit longer by rubbing them with lard to seal the pores or by turning them into pickled eggs. Preserving of fruits and vegetables was largely done in kilner jars. Glass jars with glass lids with a spring on them. You put a rubber ring around the neck of each jar before sealing it. You replaced the rubber rings each season. Even if you grew your own fruit, making jams and preserves from it was tricky, as sugar was rationed and you weren't likely to be able to get enough sugar unless you had some food item you could swap with someone else for their sugar. Many people started saving up their sugar rations right at the start of the summer to help with canning time. During the summer, the Ministry of Food was able to double the sugar rations to encourage home preserving. The Ministry of Food also advised people on how to cure and preserve meat. Pork or lamb chops could be preserved for up to 6 weeks by first cooking them and then putting them in a crock completely covered with fat. Carrots were particularly promoted to the population as there was no shortage of them and they were deemed very healthy. The Ministry of Food suggested Carolade, a homemade juice blend from mixed carrot and sweet juices, carrot jam, curried carrots, etc. Marguerite Patton later said she remembered that you wouldn't peel carrots to reduce wastage. You'd wash them instead and leave the skin on and cut the tops off as thinly as you possibly could. The Ministry of Food also created a Potato Pete character. The character acquired his own song, recorded by a woman named Betty Driver.
Potato Pete, Potato Pete, see him coming down the street, shouting his good things to eat. Get your hot potato from Potato Pete. Now hear him sing as he goes by. All the kiddies know his cry. Love to hear him shout, hi, hi. Eat your hot potatoes coming by, by, by. Have them in the packet, take them home tomorrow. Have them in for each and pray you are. He might smell out, so don't be late. If you haven't got a penny piece, to put it on the plate. Potato feet, potato feet. Now he's going down the street, shouting his good things to eat. Get your hot potatoes from potato feet. Potatoes, potatoes. Big or small, short or tall, potato feet has got.
And those of you who know of the UK soap Coronation Street will know that Betty Driver was famous for portraying Betty Williams, who in turn would become famous for her potato dish, Lancashire Hot Pot. Now for some recipes. And our first recipe today is for Lord Woolton Pie. This pie named after the Minister of Food, Lord Woolton.
Well, the first recipe we're going to do from the wartime is called Lord Woolton Pie. In 1940, the head chef at the Savoy Hotel invented the Lord Woolton Pie. And it's actually, basically, it's a vegetable pie. And the point about it is that it uses up homegrown vegetables. And what we've got in it, and there's a variety of ways of making it. We're using a pound of cauliflower, a pound of swedes, a pound of carrots, and a pound of potatoes. Now what we're doing is we're also going to add in an onion. Now, during the war, onions were worth their weight in gold. The next ingredient is a tablespoonful of oatmeal. And then 1 teaspoonful of vegetable powder. And then add in some water. Now, this water we used for boiling yesterday's potatoes, which we used for lunch today. So you don't want to put too much water in. Perhaps we need a little bit more than that. But then we just boil these for about 15 minutes so that the vegetables are soft. But once the vegetables have softened through, you then need to add them to the pie dish. The final thing to add is some herbs, just to give it that little bit of extra taste. Now, the recipes I've seen for the peerage show that people were tending to use parsley in this recipe. I'm going to put in, instead, some chives, some thyme, and some rosemary, and we'll just sprinkle them in to the top of the dish. And finally, we've got to add the topping, which is made from wholemeal pastry. Now, wholemeal flour is very important in the Second World War. White flour was virtually unavailable, and at some point the government did actually ban the production of white flour. But we have had a slight problem when I made this, because we actually ended up using 3 ounces of our cooking fats, and overall one person was only allowed, typically during the war, 4 ounces of cooking fat a week. So we're going to have to be very careful with the way that we use our cooking fat in future. This is the final product waiting to go into the oven. Looks a bit rough and ready, but here goes. Well, this is the moment of truth, my first wartime recipe, and here goes. It certainly smells good. And what we're going to do is put on a bit of gravy that we're making, a bit of the juice that was left over. Just a bit of vegetable stock, vegetable powder. Oh, actually. Oh, very hot. But actually, this has come out rather well. So, I think we have a wartime success.
You're listening to the Como Voice. Next up, we have bread pudding. And for this, you will need 10 ounces of stale bread, 2 ounces margarine or butter, 1 ounce sugar, 2 ounces dried raisins or sultanas, 1 egg, fresh or dried, milk to mix, cinnamon, extra sugar for topping, and
this is what you do.
Put bread into a basin and add a little water. Leave for 10 minutes. Squeeze bread out until fairly dry. Return bread to empty basin and add all the other ingredients except spice, adding a little milk to make a sticky consistency. Add cinnamon, a little at a time, until your own taste. Place mixture into a greased pan like a lasagna pan. Cook at 160 degrees C for an hour or so until edges are browned and centre is hot. Sprinkle sugar on top 10 minutes before end of cooking. Allow to cool a little, slice and serve. And this pudding serves 8 to 10 people. Next, a recipe for patriotic pudding. And for this, you will need 4 tablespoons flour, 4 tablespoons grated raw potato or fine oatmeal, 1 tablespoon fat, 1/2 tablespoon jam, treacle or milk, and water to mix, syrup and 1 grated carrot, 1/2 teaspoon bicarbonate of soda, pinch of salt, 2 teaspoons grated orange or lemon rind, if available, milk and water to mix. And
this is what you do.
Rub the fat into the flour, add the rest of the dry ingredients and mix well. Add the jam and carrot, heated in 4 tablespoons of milk, and mix to a soft mixture, adding more milk or water if necessary. Turn into a well-greased bowl, cover and steam for 1 hour. And now a recipe for curried rabbit. I'm not sure it's something I'd like to eat, but there you go.
This is a wartime cookbook. It was published by Durham County Council in 1940. And they have in here a recipe for curried rabbit. So what we're going to have a go next is actually to make a curried rabbit. First job I needed to do was to joint the rabbit, and that I have now done. Well, next up is measuring the flour. Now, we needed 3 tablespoonfuls of flour, and that's what it is there. Now, the book itself that we're using was written in 1940, and this was about 2 years before the government effectively put an end to the supply of plain white flour in Britain. After that, it was virtually all wholemeal flour. Now, we're using the white flour in this one because it's a 1940s recipe, but bear in mind, particularly later in the war and after the war as well, white flour was virtually impossible to come by. To the flour, you then need to add a teaspoonful of salt, followed by 1/2 teaspoonful of curry powder. Now, I'm going to cheat a bit. I'm going to put a slight touch more in because I like my curries rather strong. After you've mixed the flour, the salt and the curry powder together, you then need to sprinkle it over the rabbit. Make sure it's all coated both sides as well. That's them fully coated now, and the recipe book says that they now need to go into a frying pan with a bit of dripping, and that means using up some of our wartime rations, and a couple of sliced onions. So more of my precious onions from the allotment are going to be used in this recipe. The next job is to fry the pieces in a bit of dripping. Just fry them until they're lightly browned. Right, once they're lightly fried, put them into a casserole dish. Once you've fried the onions lightly, add them to the casserole dish. Then cover it with boiling water. You then need to put the casserole dish into the oven. We're putting it in at 180 degrees centigrade. Well, this has been cooking away for 2 hours now. We know it's ready because we've already checked it, and it's ready to be served. Here we are. This is the meal, served with rice. Rice was imported during the war. It wasn't massively available, but it was occasionally available. And I'm now going to try a bit of the rabbit. Well, it's fine, but I can't taste any curry. Nevertheless, this is a meal which was made completely off the ration. Meat off the ration and onions from the allotment.
And now, how about no cook chocolate cake? And for this, you will need 2 ounces margarine, 2 ounces sugar, 2 tablespoons of golden syrup or corn syrup, 2 ounces cocoa, 6 ounces crispy breadcrumbs, a few drops of vanilla essence, and
this is what you do.
Put the margarine, syrup and sugar in a pan and melt gently over a low heat until the margarine is fully dissolved. Mix well. Remove from heat and add the vanilla essence and the cocoa and mix thoroughly. Pour in breadcrumbs and mix until all coated with the mixture. Press down into a 7-inch square greased tin. Place somewhere cool for at least a few hours until firm. A topping can be added such as chocolate icing. Once set, cut into squares. And this makes 16 squares. If you have feedback, questions, cooking experiences or recipes you would like to share with other listeners, you can do so by emailing cooking@theglobalvoice.info. That's cookin@theglobalvoice.info. To download or to listen to this programme again, go to theglobalvoice.info/gallery. Well, that's all we have time for today. I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I have. This is Sue Hadfield saying, look after yourselves and each other. And as always, happy cooking.